What I want at the moment is your prompt death.
Recoiling at that statement, Caulfield drew his blaster and fired. But in spite of the fact that the pale Outlander was only a few yards away, he somehow missed. The black powder charges threw out great volumes of dark smoke, and he had to wait for the desert wind to clear the air so that he could see the dead body. The Outlander was still standing, unfazed and untouched, without a single wound to be seen.
What the fuck? God damn it!
This time, Caulfield actually saw the soft lead ball slam into the man's face, but it didn't. The lead had stopped in midair, flattened into a misshapen lump as if it impacted a sheet of pre-dark military armor, and fell impotently to the sandy street. But there was only air between the two of them. Fear swept over the brewmaster, and he briefly debated galloping away. But before he decided, he quickly emptied the rest of the rounds in his hand blaster. This time, he saw the billowing clouds of gun smoke form a halo around the man, revealing a sort of ball or sphere, as if the man were a bug in a jar. An invisible glass ball that could stop blasters? As the sweating man hastily went for a knife in his boot, Delphi extracted a crystalline rod from within his left sleeve and pointed it at the horse. The animal went absolutely still, then toppled like so much cooked meat. Unable to leap from the saddle fast enough, Caulfield hit the asphalt hard, the impact making him drop his knife. He heard bones break under the dead weight of the horse. A split second later, the pain arrived.
God damn it, son of a bitch!
Thick blood began to flow from the slack mouth of his deceased horse, as if its internal organs had been liquefied. Wisps of steam rose from its nostrils and ears. The sight galvanized the brewmaster into action, and he desperately clawed for the scatter gun hidden in the saddlebags. As Delphi approached, Caulfield yanked the weapon clear.
Eat this, muty lover!
He swung up the scatter gun to fire both barrels at point-blank range. Flame and thunder filled the street as the hellstrom of lead ricocheted off the defensive force field that surrounded Delphi. The mix of buckshot and bent nails sprayed randomly to strike the nearby buildings. But that was all that happened. Delphi approached the trapped man and stopped just out of reach as the brewmaster swung the smoking scattergun at his leg, trying to smash a kneecap.
Do you know how long it took me to make those stickies intelligent? To raise their baseline intellect above that of a slavering beast? To teach them how to sharpen sticks into spears, how to hide and ambush an enemy. Do you have any idea of the effort I invested into this project? Now I have to start from scratch again somewhere else. More of my precious time wasted. More inefficiency.
What are you, a thief? Those muties were chilling us.
Caulfield's shaking fingers fumbled to shove a fresh load of black powder and nails into the chamber of his weapon.
The triple damn stickies were eating our kids. They would have wiped out the whole village in another few months. We had to ace them. We had to.
Cretinous fool! That was the idea!
Delphi waved the wand. There was a flash of blue sparks, and a powerful hum filled the air. The partially loaded blaster suddenly turned red hot, then white hot, and the brewmaster threw it away just as it detonated. The blast ripped the scattergun apart and blew off both of Caulfield's hands. The mortally wounded man raised his arms to stare at the ragged stumps, spurting bright, coppery blood. Delphi gestured again. The tattered strips of flesh dangling off the ruptured arms glowed with a terrible cold fire, and the gaping wounds closed, as if the limbs had been thrust into a raging furnace and cauterized. The brewmaster couldn't believe it. The bleeding had stopped, but there had been no pain. No pain at all.
Fool, you're not going to die that quickly. First, you must pay for your crimes. Only then can I leave to find Ryan and his crew.
Ryan? Wait! I can help! I know Caldor! He trusts me! I can find him for you!
Oh, my hunters already know where he is. Besides, I never deal with traitors. Turning on the man who saved your vill. How sad. Now your death will be much more unpleasant.
The crystal wand flashed again. Riding up the side of the hill, Ryan and the companion spread out slightly so that they didn't offer a group target to anybody hidden in the thick cactus growing on the sandy dune. There was no sign of anybody, but only a Pheeb took chances. Cresting the top, the companions stopped as they saw the row of bloody crosses sticking out of the damp soil. There were the tattered remains of people nailed onto the wood, the bodies hanging limply with their stomachs slit open, the distended bowels hanging down into bowls on the ground. The prisoners had been opened wide, and their intestines removed, but left connected. There was a growing smell in the air of blood and night soil, a foulness so thick that the companions could almost taste the hellish reek. Christy closed her eyes to mutter a silent prayer of forgiveness to the Earth Mother Gaia. Leveling their blasters, Ryan and JB checked for traps as they started toward the horribly mangled bodies. Neither of the warriors had ever seen anything quite like this before, which disturbed them greatly. Bits and pieces of the prisoners were tossed around, the ground alive with insects and green lizards. Scorpions battled over a split tongue, while a swarm of beetles hurriedly consumed something too obscene to be closely identified.
Remember the crazy eunuch from Novaville?
Eugene. Yeah. I would have sworn this was his work if Shard hadn't aced the bastard right in front of us.
There were students, folks he was teaching his techniques at the Ville, maybe...
JB left the sentence unfinished. Ryan clicked off the safety on his 9mm Sig Sauer.
Yeah, maybe.
Triple crazy shit. Like Predoc Kohout's Mildred told about? Nazis?
They were called Nazis, and yes, this is exactly the sort of torture they did to enemies of the state. Not exactly my time. I wasn't born yet when the Allies took down Adolf Hitler and his mad followers.
That's the Baron who tried to take over the world?
Close enough, yes.
Doc closed the cylinder of his Ruger 44. The Predark revolver was a recent acquisition from Blaster Base 1, a redoubt the companions had discovered filled with military supplies. The old man still carried the Lama at his side, but the black powder weapon from the Civil War took a long time to reload, while the Ruger took bullets and could be reloaded in a matter of only moments. The horses were clearly nervous among all the carnage, and even Doc had to admit to a certain queasiness in his stomach. This hadn't been the work of sane minds.
Well, I'll be fucked. Anybody notice something odd about the placement of these crosses?
They're not facing each other. The logical thing would be to arrange them in a circle so that all of your prisoners could watch the others being taken apart.
But these aren't.
No.
They're all facing north.
Ryan shifted in his saddle. He gently stroked his horse's neck to try to calm the animal. Even though these horses had been trained for war, this much death and bloodshed was making them apprehensive. Hell, it was making Ryan apprehensive. He had witnessed cannies cut up their victims to make them sing death songs, the screams supposed to make the flesh taste sweeter. But that had been a clean chill compared to this form of butchery.
It's done for us, no question. Catch attention, piss us off.
Doc brandished a fist.
I am mad, sir. I am absolutely acrimonious.
They're not good. They want angry, you be calm. Not do what they expect.
Breathing through clenched teeth, Doc radiated a fine fury for a while, then relaxed his shoulders.
You are correct, of course. That is wisdom indeed, my young friend. I shall endeavor to comply.
JB studied the moon behind the clouds. He wore a sextant on a chain around his neck, which could pinpoint their exact position anywhere on the planet to within a few miles.
Yeah, looks like the bodies are all facing north by northwest, in the direction of the Mohawk Mountains.
Isn't there supposed to be another redoubt hidden among the peaks?
Somewhere, yeah.
Ryan slid the Steyr SSG-70 long blaster off his shoulder and checked the internal clip. The bolt action held 5 rounds in a transparent clip, and Ryan wanted to make sure it was carrying Predark brass taken from Blaster Base 1 and not some of their hand loads. When he faced down the Coldhearts who did this kind of chilling, he sure as hell didn't want to chance a misfire.
Come on, let's go find the bastards.
As the companions began moving off the hilltop, Christy slowed her mount until she was the last one remaining. Reaching into her saddlebag, she pulled out a military canister, pulled the ring, flipped off the handle, and tossed the charge into the middle of the blood-soaked ground. Then, kicking her mount hard in the rump, Christie started to gallop down the side of the dune. She had traveled only a few yards when the Predark Ren detonated. A sizzling white light shattered the night as the Willy Peter Gren cut loose, a charge of white phosphorus washing over the hellish scene in a searing chem inferno. As she rejoined the others, the top of the hill was alive with writhing flames, thick smoke rising into the starry sky.
Why you do that? Waste a Gren.
They left a message for us, so I'm sending one right back.
Blood for blood. Good thinking. Maybe piss them off, huh?
I certainly hope so.
We're gonna chill these cold hearts on sight, then burn the bodies and piss on the ashes.
Damn straight we will.
Deep within Mildred, there was the growing heated rush to kill, an unusual sensation for the peaceful healer. But experience had taught her that some people had to be treated like cancer cells. You killed them to save the rest of the body. So be it. If these fools wanted a fight, then cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war.
Blood for blood.
As the companions reached level ground,
yeah!
Ryan kicked the big stallion into a full gallop, and the companions urged their mounts to greater speeds across the sandy plain. In the far distance, the Mohawk Mountains stood immutable on the darkening horizon, the jagged peaks rising like the teeth of some great slumbering beast waiting for its next kill.
More, bitch.
Taking John Rogan's dirty plate, Lily bent over the campfire and filled the hubcap with rabbit stew. The elder Rogan took the food without comment and started eating again with a homemade wooden spoon. The glen was quiet this night, the only sounds coming from the cook fire and the small waterfall that splashed from the side of a large boulder near a blockhouse. Tall trees and bushes completely encircled the field of green grass. The only break in the thick foliage sealed off with a crude gate of wood, broken glass, and barbed wire. Soon the other Rogan brothers demanded refills. Lily hastily complied. Aside from being easily twice her size, the brothers were monstrously strong and utterly ruthless. They gave her little food and beat her from time to time. The combination left the young woman too weak to protest their treatment, much less think about escape. Although she dreamed of it in her sleep, freedom, sweet freedom, and of course, bloody revenge. All of the Rogan brothers were dressed in pre-dark combat boots and loose green military fatigues, with blasters and ammo belts covering their bodies like primitive armor. At the moment, only three of the giants were sitting around the campfire. There was a fourth seat at the fire, but the wooden box was empty. Alan Rogan was off doing a wreck for an outlander called Ryan. Lily's brothers desperately wanted the man, but only because he traveled with some white hair called Tanner. That was their real goal, and they needed Tanner alive for some reason. Lily could only assume it was for torture. Oddly, in spite of their endless torments, the brothers had recently given their sister some pre-dark clothing, much better than anything Lily had ever worn before. She had dark green leather boots with good solid soles. The denim pants were without any patches, as was the camo-colored t-shirt. The thin material was no protection from the cold, though. She was fine during the day, but at night, Lily had to stay close to the campfire or risk freezing. The fact that Lily had to wash fresh blood from the clothing when it was offered was just something accepted as a hard fact of life. The brothers didn't barter for goods. The Coldhearts took whatever they wanted at the end of a blaster, and anybody who got in the way regretted it for the rest of their lives, which usually lasted only a couple of minutes. She could almost forgive them the mindless brutality. It was their unclean fascination with pre-dark tech that repulsed the woman to the core of her being. Science had destroyed the world, slaughtering untold billions. How anybody could want electric lights or libraries again was beyond her understanding. It made her skin crawl to merely look at the electric motorcycles with their headlights and radios. The machines somehow drew power from the sun. Power from sunlight. What could possibly be more unnatural than that? At the sound in the distance, John lowered his spoon and looked up from his plate of stew.
That's blaster fire.
We out here?
Unconsciously, Robert touched the bandana that covered a wide, puckered scar around his neck.
Somebody must be getting jacked out in the dunes. Maybe a nice, juicy caravan, eh?
That means wounded to loot, eh, Edward?
Always are.
Barrel-chested Edward was huge, yet he had challenged his younger brother John for control of the group only once. That was a mistake he would never make again. Edward was the biggest, but not the meanest or the most deadly. That honor went to John. It was the elder Rogan who had created the nightmare tortures they inflicted upon the people they captured, and he always had some new idea to try, each one worse than the last. There didn't seem to be a limit to his brutality. Robert dropped his plate into the fire and licked his fingers clean.
Could be Ryan and his crew. Maybe they're trying to lure us out of the glen. Jack the Jackass, so to speak.
A night creep?
Sure. Why not?
Tossing aside his own plate, John reached behind the box he was sitting on and lifted a gleaming M16 M203 rapid fire. The sleek combo weapon was one of the many perks the brothers had gotten from the mysterious being who called himself Delphi. The double-barrel pre-dark military weapon was in perfect condition, without a speck of rust or corrosion. The M16 rapid fire on top had ammo clips that held 30 live rounds of shiny brass. It could vomit a hailstorm of lead that mowed down a room full of people like wind bending the prairie grass. But underneath that barrel was the gaping maw of the M203 Gren launcher. The portable cannon fired only a single shell at a time, but the huge 40mm Gren could blow down a house or kill a dozen muties in a thundering blast of steel flechettes. Working the arming bolts, the three brothers stood and started across the glen. A few yards away, three black bikes rested on the cool green grass. Strapped across the rear fender of each were cargo pods, molded to the frame as if installed when the bikes were new. Inside the pods was a wealth of canned food, meds, clothing, grens, and piles of ammo clips for the combo rapid fires. Advance payment for killing Ryan and capturing the white hair called Tanner. John flinched at the memory of Delphi forcibly reminding them not to hurt the wrinkly in any way. If they did, the punishment would be worse than anything the Rogans had done to their own victims. John was stubborn, but not feeble enough to doubt that the strange outlander meant every word of the dire threat. John checked the hand blaster at his side.
We take the bikes, but leave in pairs, each covering the other as we go. Ace anybody you see who doesn't have white hair.
Robert dropped the clip from his rapid fire to check the load. Satisfied, he shoved it back into the weapon.
Sounds good, bro. That's right!
Tucking the rapid fires into the cushioned holster sets along the front yoke of the sleek bikes, the two men climbed onto their two-wheelers and twisted the hand grips to bring the electric engine softly purring into life. The dashboard came alive with glowing green lights. The usual gear chain had been replaced with an enclosed transmission that connected the engine to the rear wheel. The effect was that the two-wheeler was as silent as a grave. As the bikes came alive, Lily tried not to shudder in revulsion. Bastard tech lovers, she thought hatefully. While Robert and Edward opened the gate that closed off the gap in the bushes that surrounded the hidden glen, John rolled his bike over to Lily.
Give me your clothes.
With great reluctance, Lily removed her clothing and passed over the garments. Taking the bundle, John rode to the blockhouse and locked them behind the iron door. He thought his sister was a feeble slut, but not crazy enough to try running without a stitch to cover her ass. Moving like ghosts, the three Rogan brothers drove through the bushes that surrounded the hidden glen, but paused to swing the gate shut and arm the explosive booby traps hidden in the greenery. With resignation, the naked girl went back to her cooking, building up the fire to stave off the evening chill. Stirring the dented steel pot full of rabbit stew, Lily shivered involuntarily at the memory of the people who hadn't been given the boon of a swift death. The men with only one eye, and the wrinklies who proved not to be the sought-after Tanner. Sometimes, Lily could still hear the screaming in her dreams at night. The poor bastards had been taken apart like a blaster, and left that way to die slowly, while bugs and muties gnawed on their guts. It was horrible beyond words. It seemed impossible that the same blood ran in her veins as in those freaks. But they had all come from the same mother, even if each of them had a different father. Kin was supposed to care for Kin, but the Rogan brothers never obeyed anybody, and they seemed to take special delight in torturing their little sister. Someday, it would be her turn to taste the sharp steel of their horrible knives. That was, unless she did something about it.